thermometer is reacting to the environment that it's in. So if it's cold outside, it's going to drop. That, compared to a thermostat, is then being able to actually influence the environment. How you react and or influence the environment is going to greatly then influence the outcome of the group that you will find yourself in.
A lot of times we can let how other people feel or the circumstances that we're in influence us most of the time for the negative.
And so our question today, audience, is, are you being a thermometer and just reacting to what is happening around you? Or are you being a thermostat?
All right, Matt, how are we doing?
I'm trying to garner some patience here with some technology of you and I trying to battle this whole platform of creating a podcast. But maybe that's part of the experience, is cultivating patience with technology.
For our listeners, we have been battling bad Wi-Fi, or who knows, technical difficulties.
Who knows what it is? We don't know what it is.
For the last almost hour, but we're here and we're back and we're ready to talk about being the thermometer. Yeah. Being the thermometer or the thermostat. And we're probably actually experiencing a really good experience right now for this discussion.
Absolutely.
How to influence your environment or let your environment influence you. Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm totally being influenced or reactive to my environment right now. So I'm being a thermometer, unfortunately. Yeah.
How can we switch you into being a thermostat?
First off, let me just kind of explain. The title of this podcast or this episode is most likely going to be thermometer versus thermostat, right? And people are wondering, like, what the heck? Can you just mention what we're talking about? So I want to invite people to get into their creative modes and think about a thermometer and think about a thermostat. And from like a technological, tactical standpoint, like, what do they do, right? As devices, as mechanisms. And it's exactly what you just said earlier. So thermometer is reacting to the environment that it's in. So if it's cold outside, the thermometer is going to do what? It's going to drop. Sure. If it's hot outside, it's going to do what? It's going to rise, right?
Yeah.
So that, compared to a thermostat, is then being able to influence the environment. So a thermostat, when it gets cold in the environment, it's going to make it warm, or it's going to make it neutral, right? Especially when you think about a house that has a thermostat, you set the degrees to, I don't know, what do you set your house to? Are you like a 67 or are you like a 72?
I like a 70 at night. Jeff likes it at like 68, so we've kind of had to like compromise somewhere in between there, depending on the actual temperature outside. Our house is pretty old, so if it's cold outside, it's really cold in here.
Yeah, but yeah. Point is, right? You set your thermostat to where you want it to be, and so it's then influencing your home to make it or bring it back to whatever set point you have it at. So, as you alluded to, are you a thermostat or are you a thermometer? Ashley and I, again, we've been battling technological difficulties for the past hour. And as a result, my flusteredness has gone up because the environment of technology has made it so that I am reacting to it. I'm not trying to be more patient and more understanding of stupid technology sometimes. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So here's kind of the discussion, and why I think it's important is whether you're, and I'm coming from just an athletic standpoint, whether you're someone on the bench that hardly sees playing time, or the manager of the club, how you react and or influence the environment is going to greatly then influence the outcome, especially collectively, of the group that you will find yourself in. And so our question today, audience, is, are you being a thermometer and just reacting to what is happening around you? Or are you being a thermostat? Why might this be, Ash, like, oh, why might this be important, you know, pertinent, interesting, etc.?
I mean, it's really important because we're all in different environments and we're surrounded by different people who react to different things differently. I think especially in a team environment, for me, some people are going to have really good days, some people are going to have really bad days, or somewhere in between.
Yeah.
And a lot of times we can let how other people feel or how our environment is or the circumstances that we're in influence us most of the time for the negative, I feel like. But yeah, that's why I think it's important.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I just thought of, you know, how pertinent this is to any domain that one might find themselves in. I'm thinking about being a parent and how emotionally charging this experience can be in dealing with a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old. That's how old my beautiful kids are. I love them unconditionally, but at times they make you want to do things that you would never dream of doing, like pulling out your hair. So am I, as a dad, you know, in these situations of when my daughter just isn't listening for the 80th time, am I being a thermometer for her? Am I being a thermostat? Because kids, especially at that age, they are going to, and especially if it's my daughter who's really sensitive to just emotions, she feels, what's that, empath? Is that what those people are called? They mm-hmm. just feel
yeah.
the emotional energy of other individuals. They are going to sense that. But it's not just being a parent, it's being a business, it's being in relationships, it's being in sport, obviously, it's being in music. And so whatever environment you might find yourself in, I think it's important to ask yourself, what kind of energy am I bringing to my collective, to my group? Because no matter what, whether they recognize it consciously or you recognize it consciously, it's going to set a tone, especially if you're in an influential position, like a coach position, leadership position, captain position. But even if you're not, that still is going to play a role. You know, I remember first having this discussion with a head coach in major college sports about this, and she was going through some really hard times. I think it was with recruiting and the cohesive unit of her team. It was the off season, just wasn't going well. And we were having this conversation, and I asked her, I'm like, are you being a thermostat right now, or are you being a thermometer? And of course, because she didn't know the context, she's like, what the hell do you mean? However, then in explaining that you are setting the tone, and so are you influencing your team, or are you just reacting to your team? And then it was this kind of self-awakening, a moment for her as the head coach to go, I need to be better. I need to be better on my body language, what I'm saying, how I'm saying it, when I'm saying it, how I'm delivering it, in any situation that me and our team find ourselves in. And so that was a fun moment for me, you know, as a practitioner delivering this and having this conversation, and how can she do better at becoming a thermostat? And by the way, I didn't make up this analogy of thermostat versus thermometer. I think it came from, you know, I don't want to give credit to her. So I heard it from like an Elite 11 quarterback camp years ago. I don't know if that's where it came from, but anyways, I didn't invent this. I wish I did, unfortunately.
You're just the facilitator of the great.
Yeah, idea. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. anyway, so leading into this, like, well, how do you do that, right? Like, to become a thermostat and to positively influence the environment that you find yourself in, especially in sport, how do you do that? For me, this screams emotional regulation. And this is something that I know you and I have really, really talked about. And so I want to bring up this discussion point with you, Ash, about the importance of emotional regulation, what you've seen, negative, positive, in your own kind of inner experience, and from being around coaches and other players in your experience as well, in and around this emotional regulatory lived experience. What do you think?
I mean, I feel like emotional regulation is really important, and I would add self-awareness in there as well. I know we talk about self-awareness a lot, but recognizing like how your emotions are going to affect those around you. I've been on teams before where our coach is very loud and you know exactly how the coach is feeling. And I've been in locker rooms before where it's like, oh, like coach is in a bad mood today. This is going to be a tough day of training, you know, or like so-and-so is really upset today. We know it's going to bleed into training or their performance. And so as an athlete, it's really important to understand how you're emotionally feeling. And if your emotions, whether they're positive or negative, are contributing to those around you, what does that look like? For me, body language on the field is really, really important. Also, like verbal communication, and also like your tone and how you're delivering information is also really, really important. But I think being aware of your emotions and the message that you're giving to those around you is something we don't talk about enough. And it's something that I feel like we don't reflect on enough on ourselves. I feel like we notice when other people are doing it, but we don't notice when we're doing it. And so I think being able to step back and look at our performance and how we're affecting those around us is important, and it can positively impact the team if we all come together and try and be better about it.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more. It's profoundly impactful, again, whether we're actually recognizing it consciously or not. Our emotions play just a huge role in this process of becoming a thermostat, a more effective thermostat for our team. So leaning on some of the science behind this, there's quite a bit of research in and around what they call emotional intelligence. They call it EI, and you can take EI assessments, and you, as a result, they spit out this EI quotient, like a intelligence test. So it's similar to what you see. So one of the leading researchers, more of a practitioner, but I think he does a bit of research as well, as Daniel Goleman, has a wonderful book in and around emotional intelligence. In fact, I think it's called Emotional Intelligence, I guess, at least the main title. He breaks it down into four categories in terms of understanding, conceptualizing, and integrating emotional intelligence, essentially becoming more regulatory of your emotions. So first is this, you said it, Ashley, self-awareness, understanding what emotions are happening, recognizing, embracing, and seeing these are the emotions that are arising, and these are the ones that I'm experiencing more often. Then here's the second one, is this self-management protocol. And I'm going to get into one kind of exercise here in just a minute. That's number two. Three is social awareness. So then understanding how others' emotions are affecting you and vice versa, how your emotions are affecting them. And then being able to manage that. So social management is number four. So interrelationships, what role is emotions, what are they playing essentially? Now, with self-management, there's a number of things that one can do to quote unquote regulate their emotions. My all-time favorite is, first and foremost, pausing. So taking a literal pause on what you're doing. So if you're being emotionally charged by this individual or saying something or being in a certain environment, step back, take a pause, get away from, do whatever you need to do to just stop. That alone is going to allow for more collectivity of this self-awareness piece to come into play. These are the emotions that I'm experiencing right now. This is how I'm feeling. I need to just take a pause. Then I know we talked about this before, Ashley, I think on the podcast actually before too, is breathing. So incorporating any kind of deliberate breath into this experience is going to be highly, highly effective for a number of reasons. But one in particular that I find really interesting is when we are deliberately breathing, our focus is on the breathing. And so you're taking your mind away from what is charging the emotion. And so in theory, it's going to simmer. It's going to start to feel like you're more in control of the situation, and especially, again, of your emotions. And then here's the last thing, at least in terms of becoming more emotionally intelligent and managing this. There's this thing called, it's my very, one of my all-time favorite theories in science, called the reversal theory. I think it's by the last name Kerr, and it was like in 1985. It was a long time ago. Reversal theory, basically, this is what it postulates. You being able to reinterpret your, what they call arousal or energy levels. And so instead of viewing this emotion or this thought as negative or detrimental, you're reversing the interpretation. So think of it as facilitative. Think of it as helpful. This is the, going to then bring the blood pressure down, bring your heart rate down, bring the emotionally charged negative event into hopefully a more controlled, influenced protocol. So that reinterpreting, that breathing, that taking pause is a number. Those are a number of things that one can do to set the thermostat, right? To then influence the environment. And so then what is an emotionally charged situation can hopefully then be perceived by those around you as something that is maybe calming, maybe is something that I can actually deal with, even though there's screaming fans all around me, my coach, my captain, etc. I mean, look how calm and posed she is, or at least looks like it. Maybe I should utilize that. Maybe I should be similar, right? You're setting that energy and setting that tone and that influence. Anyways, those are a number of things, at least over the years, I know that we've talked about, Ashley, in terms of regulating your emotions and, in this case, becoming more of a thermostat rather than a thermometer. What do you think?
Yeah. I think it's important also to address that, like, emotions aren't bad. We're not saying yeah. that, like, being mad or sad or upset or happy is a bad thing. I think it's when you let your emotions continue to dictate bad behaviors or continue to negatively influence those around you. I think it's very common in a team setting. So it's like you were saying, how can we reinterpret, how can we facilitate these emotions in a positive way? For example, like when I'm on the pitch and I make a mistake, it's okay to like express that frustration. Sometimes that frustration comes out just, I can't control it right away. Like, I know sometimes we're like, I'll be like, ugh, like that usually comes out, or gosh dang it will come out. But
gosh,
it's like,
dang,
okay,
is what you usually say, isn't it?
gosh darn dang tootin'. It yes, that's usually what comes out like right away. But that also helps me recognize, okay, I'm going to get the next one. Usually I'll say it out loud to myself. I'm a lot harder on myself than I am on my teammates. Totally. But when my teammates can see that I've messed up and I'm frustrated with myself, it helps me tremendously when they're like, it's okay, next one, you got it. So, and that's something that I do a lot to my teammates as well, that I feel like is helpful for them, but also for me in recognizing that like they messed up, instead of being like, oh my gosh, they messed up, I can't believe it, I am so upset they messed up and they missed that, now we have to run more, or I'm scared I'm gonna mess up because they messed up. For me, it's no, they got it, next one. And that I feel like is a way that I can be a thermostat for myself, but also for those around me. And I've been a part of many different teams where it can go really, really bad, really fast, or we're on top of it and it can go the other direction depending on the game. But yeah, I think being able to recognize and reinterpret are two like very, very important things that take practice, take deliberate practice, and just recognizing how it's affecting your play, because it ultimately does affect your play and it can affect your team and those around you.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more. In fact, Ditto. The great Roger Federer, to illustrate that point exactly. Ooh, hold on. Thank you. This is what he said. The one who stays calm and composed, especially under pressure, has the upper hand. For those that know Roger Federer and his game, he seemed to always be lethargic is the wrong word, just relaxed in his play. But he's one of the best, if not the very best, to play the game of tennis, at least in men's tennis. And in his own words, once again, it's being able to regulate the inner experience, especially emotionally, that can then give you, and collectively, if you're playing a team sport like soccer, the upper hand, right? Because there's so many things that contribute to you reacting and being a thermostat, whether it's horrible referees or your coach sucks or your teammates suck or the other team is better or there's 60,000 fans. That can all be really easy in terms of just reacting and saying, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, yeah, there's just too much. There's too much pressure.
Yeah.
But to be deliberate, like you said, about regulating that experience, you need to throw in some of these techniques, like taking a pause, like reinterpreting how you're feeling, like deliberately breathing, and it's going to facilitate that entire process. I have a question for you, because this is something I think is really interesting in terms of especially emotional intelligence, so this EI component. What teams, well, maybe you don't mention specifically, have you been around, especially leaders in your life, Ash, where this has been negative for whatever experience or for whatever reason? You've noticed that this coach or assistant coach or parent or whomever is being more of a thermostat, and how that affected maybe negatively the rest of the environment. Have you had those experiences?
Yeah, unfortunately, one too many. But two come to mind. I've definitely had coaches before that will definitely let you know when you've made a mistake, and they're on top of people every time they make a mistake, just like screaming, yelling, mm-hmm. or coming in at halftime and players being scared because they know the performance wasn't good enough and we're all going to get ripped to shreds because of our performance. And it definitely dictates how the team then therefore goes out and performs. I feel like when the coach comes in and is heated and upset and mad and isn't facilitating in good information to help us go out there and perform, we all go out there kind of scared to make a mistake instead of executing a game plan right. that will help us win or keep the win or come back from being down. So yeah, I've definitely experienced that. I've also experienced it though, being a player on the field and seeing the other team be not very nice to each other. And when that happens, I kind of giggle to myself like, oh, we've got them, because they're already digging their own graves. Like, especially as a forward, there's a way to go about things if one of your teammates isn't doing something right. So a positive or an effective example is, I feel like Andy Sullivan is really, really good at this. And oftentimes she's behind me mm-hmm. directing me. She's very unemotional about it, but direct and like, hey, you need to slide left. You need to slide right. What did you see on this one? It's very collaborative, but it's effective, and we're able to like solve problems really well together. But I've been playing against other opponents where their center backs are yelling at their midfielders, like, what the freak are you doing? They're not saying freak, they're saying other words, but
yeah, I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what are you doing? You suck. I can't believe it. Like, that's your fault. Whatever. Like, blaming instead of being helpful, encouraging, facilitative. And when that happens, I'm like, all right, we got to keep doing this. We got to go at them because they're just right. destroying themselves. And then it goes, I've seen one girl yell at this girl, and the girl that she yelled at, I could see that girl talk to another girl and is like, oh my gosh, I can't believe she yelled at me that way. And so instead of them focusing on the game plan and how to win the game, they're talking about how their other teammate talked about them. And then it just like it spreads like wildfire because people's emotions are all over the place. They're upset because someone hurt their feelings, and it happens. Like, I've been there before. But I think it's really important to make sure you squash it right away. And also recognize the impact that your words and your actions and reactions have on those around you, and just be like, is this going to be helpful to my teammate? And if it's not, sometimes it's best not to say something if you're going to let emotions dictate it. But when you're talking about Roger Federer, or when I just think about tennis players in general, when they win a point, and or when they win a tournament, or when you see a team like win a championship, or for me, like scoring a PK, seeing the emotion released once you've done what you're trying to do is really fun and really enjoyable. But it's even more enjoyable when you are calm and composed through it. Like, it's hard to be calm and composed in those moments, like you said, when there's a million fans, whether they're your home fans or away fans, yelling at you. You have a coach maybe not yelling at you, but maybe instructing you in high pressure situation, and you're tired. Being tired also kind of affects your emotions and your ability to regulate it. And there's so much going on. But when you're able, when you hear that final whistle and you've won, or you scored the PK, or you've hit match point and you won, like, it's so fun to see those people like down, like on their knees, like fists clenched, like screaming. It's because it takes a lot to like regulate those emotions. It's not easy. But when you do it and you do it right, it's super effective. And so we're not saying emotions are bad, but it's when you let those emotions influence your performance on the negative side. So it's really fun to see those pros like Roger Federer, Rafa Nadal, Serena Williams, me, like anyone, succeed at something that was really, really hard. Usually they're letting out a lot of emotion, and I feel like it's because they're really good at regulating their emotions for the right moment.
Yeah, I mean there's so many beautiful things in there. It's not about being emotionless. It's just regulating it in a effective or efficacious way, especially when you're around other people. And more often than not, in high performance situations, you're around other people. And so how you react is going to play a role. I mean, there were so many wonderful things in there, Ashley, from all four of those steps, from Daniel Goldman's work of self-awareness, self-management, social awareness, and social management. I love that it not only was positively directly influencing you and your team, but indirectly, because the other team was lacking their thermostat. And so one would argue that you're emotionally very intelligent, Ashley.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Lots of practice, still a long way there, to go, but
right. And that's so important for people to understand, is that it's practicing this deliberately is going to help you get better at it. You're not just going to be automatically regulated when it comes to your emotions. You have to be very consistent and deliberate with it, just like any other skill set. A negative experience that I had kind of recently was being around a high level football team. And football, I get it for you, like American football fans out there. I know it's machismo and like battleground and hitting and sweat and blood. I get it. It's a really aggressive sport. I understand. However, I believe, and this is just my opinion, it doesn't constitute or afford someone to belittle or denigrate someone else. So emotionally intelligent people in football are kind of hard to come by, especially if they're in leadership positions. I remember being around one coach in particular, and he was coaching his position group. And again, I'm not going to give too much information away, so I don't, you know, the red flag doesn't go up like, oh, he's talking about coach blah, blah, blah. He was coaching his position group, and it felt like every other word was effing bleepity bleep, effing bleepity bleep. And again, I get it. It's an intense sport. You need to be intense. It's not, the point isn't to be emotionless. It's just to regulate what you're saying and how you're saying it. Because guess what? A lot of that particular position group wanted to come talk to me. And there was a reason they wanted to come talk to me, because of their frickin' coach.
Yeah.
And he wasn't very fun to be around. His thermostat was, you suck. You're an effing bleepity bleep. And if you don't do what I'm telling you what to do, you're not worth anything, not only as a football player, but as a human being. And so the tone was horrible. Yeah. And the environment for this particular position group was horrible, because the leader was setting it and it wasn't effective. It wasn't good. And so, especially in sports like American football, where the intensity and the aggressiveness is a part of the game, I believe you can still come with a more regulatory response, because it's going to influence the rest of the team. And especially in such a way that will hopefully be positive and be successful and cohesive. So,
I actually want to ask you a few more questions about this specific, not the details of like who and what, but I feel like this is a situation that I found myself in many times, and that I'm sure a lot of people find themselves in, of having a coach that they feel is belittling them. And they do it, the coaches, I feel like this is really old school, but the coaches do it all in the name of motivation, right? Like, I'm just trying to get the best out of them, blah, 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 blah. I feel like that's a bunch of BS. And I feel like we're moving in the right direction, but we still got a long ways to go. So how did you help these specific athletes who came? Like, I feel like you're put in a really hard position, because you're trying to help them navigate a situation where their coach most likely isn't going to change in one day, but you want to help provide them with the tools to be able to emotionally regulate, or kind of just like ignore the terrible things that their coach is telling them. So how do you best support, how have you best supported those players? I'm sure there was some encouraging of maybe talking to the coach. Did you talk to the coach? Like, how do you navigate that situation?
I wish I, in retrospect, was close enough that I could have talked to the coach, because I was in, fortunately, a position where no matter what I would have said to him, he wasn't going to bench me. Maybe he would have yelled at me too and called me an effity bleepity beep, but I don't care. I wish I could have talked to him. I didn't. And so instead, in talking to some of his players, it was, this coach is this way. And we all know it's not a great way to be. So of the situation, what do you have direct influence over?
What can you
control, right? And unfortunately, there was very little. And eventually, it came down to, or ultimately, it came down to how you respond to his very inappropriate behavior. And it was trying to remain calm amid the storm of profanity and denigrating, belittling comments. And then doing your best to be the best version of yourself, but also the best player that he wants you to be, because tactically you could still tackle better, you could still hit harder, you could still run faster, right? And so maybe on some level, what he's saying, you can do better at. But him calling you and setting this tone of negativity, we need to be able to control what we can control. And more often than not, that's our attitude and our preparation and our effort. So especially in this case, your attitude. How are you going to have a better attitude going into practice today with Coach XYZ? And I'm going, you know, the conversation was, I'm going to take more deep breaths. I'm going to, you know, look to the side for a minute so I can just take a pause and take some breaths and hopefully kind of reinterpret some of this anxiety around what he's creating for this particular position group. It takes time, though. You know, like having the conversations was really helpful, but then it was, okay, how are you going to implement this today and tomorrow and the next week and the next week and the next week? Because unfortunately, he's probably going to be around for a while. So how can you be better at dealing with this particular coach?
Those
are some of the conversations in and around that particular situation.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's really helpful. I think, unfortunately, that situation happens a lot more than we think or than we talk about. And it's so, so challenging. Like you said, I think it's important to recognize the things that you can influence. But I know we talked about this last episode with like the holistic athlete, but I've been on teams where my coach, I did not jive with the coach's coaching style, and I did not get motivated by getting yelled at and screamed at and cussed at. And it kept happening over and over. But talking with you and trying to control the things that I could control, focus on the little things that I wanted to improve on health, but also being able to get away from it a little bit and have other hobbies or just have, I don't know, we were talking about Netflix before this, a TV show that interests me and excites me, because it can consume you if you let it.
Take a step back. Yeah. Killing Eve is the show that I recommended Ashley and her husband.
I'm going to check it out tonight.
Watch. It's a fantastic show. I just started watching Killing Eve on Netflix. Really kind of dark, but really good nonetheless. Here's a thing I want to ask, or maybe just comment on. I would love to somehow collectively ask all high performing athletes, professional athletes mostly, well, and college as well, college and above. And I want to ask them, do you get motivated by a coach calling you an effing bleepity bleep in front of your face in front of the whole team? I would guess, I've never played professional sports. I've never played college sports. I've been around it. But my guess would be, no, I do not get motivated or positively influenced by a coach telling me that I'm an effing bleepity bleep in front of the entire team. And so my question is it just old school? Like, and coaches can't adapt and they can't adopt new coaching methods? Or what's the deal? Because am I wrong? Would most athletes agree with me in saying, no, I do not get motivated by that?
I think at least female athletes for sure 100% agree with you. I haven't met anyone that does get motivated by that. I do think it's old school, but I also think it's harder to do the opposite, to give coaches a little bit of leeway here, I guess. I don't think it's right, but you are on the hot seat all the time. And if your athletes aren't performing to where you want them, I feel like that's when their emotions take over, and it's quicker to yell at someone and want them to do better than to be like, how's your day going? Why? You seem a little off today. What is it? Did you not sleep well? Is everything at home going okay? You have to build that foundation, and you have to be able to understand those layers of your athletes. But like in college, especially now with like the transfer portal and all the players coming in and out, like it takes a lot more work to be able to get to know your players. And also, sadly, I feel like some of the coaches are maybe thinking they're going to be gone in a year or two, so I need to get the most out of them right now before they leave. Yeah. I don't think it's right. I 100% disagree with it. I think that coaches need to be able to understand that like they are the leaders of their environment, and the things that they value, their athletes will also value. So if you value treating your players like human beings, of course, you can still have a high standard and want them to perform at their absolute best, but you can also make sure they know that you care about them, and you have to have those conversations, and it's how you treat others. If I see my coach belittling another player, that's going to scare me, and that's going to make me subconsciously think less about that player, even though I should have absolutely no reason to think less of that player. When I'm getting belittled, I'm already subconsciously thinking that my teammates think less of me. Like, it's just like this endless cycle that is toxic, and it's hard to undo once you start doing it. You can't like start belittling someone and then someone's like, hey, you probably shouldn't do that. And then like it's harder to undo that. See, it's just, I think it's just bad habits definitely die hard. And a lot of these coaches are probably also coached that way. So it's like, how do we change the trajectory? How do we like break this cycle? And I think it's having conversations, and also players who maybe do feel comfortable having conversations with coaches, but also management who are hiring coaches, like valuing that, like it starts from the top down. And if you create an environment, if you hire for that purpose, you will then be more successful as an organization. But it's just really hard because we live in the world of sports where everyone wants to win now. And if you're not winning now, what, like, how do you fix it now? And it's like, no, that's not how it works. I was actually thinking about it today. Like, it kind of makes me sad that there is so much interchange in the college game right now, just because I feel like you can't really build those, like, strong foundations and those relationships and grow through challenges. I understand the reason for players like wanting to move, but you also miss out on like working through challenges and starters and not starters. Like, it's so much harder to build that good locker room environment. And I feel like it's just this huge snowball and everything affects it. And that's kind of my two cents on why coaches are still like this and why it still happens, especially in the game of American football.
And I had to throw American in there because this is soccer or football oriented.
Yeah.
My thought is, why can't everyone just get a PhD in psychology and understand human behavior? And that's just not the approach that one should go, right? My favorite quote to date, and maybe we've talked about this, and if not, we're going to, about what makes a great leader is one that is both warm and demanding. You understand the human experience, you're sympathetic to it, but it doesn't mean that you still can't demand the very, very best out of your team, out of your athletes. I think that's a wonderful way to be a thermostat, especially as a leader, but you can also do it as a captain or just a role player. So, anyways, technology, I think, is still hanging on for us, Ashley. I have a feeling it might bum out on us soon. Is there anything else that we need to talk
about? We need to cut. End it now. Hurry. No, I'm just kidding.
Any other thoughts around this awesome topic?
No, I would just agree with you. And as a player, I know for me, when I know I'm cared about, I will perform better. If I know that you love me as a person, you want the best for me, I already have a really high standard for myself. I'd love for you to have a high standard for me as well. But I am much more motivated by love than fear. And I want to say that 99.99% of athletes, especially female athletes, are motivated that way. And I think that's the direction that we all need to go, not only as coaches, but also as leaders and parents and family members. And I think when we all start doing it together, hopefully we can change the trajectory of this. But that's all I
got. Beautifully said. So people, use that to be the thermostat that you need to be in your space, on your team, in your company. All right. That's a wrap. DITTO in the house.
Out.
Peace out.
Thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you.
We really appreciate all of you listening. We're super happy with all the feedback that we've got, whether it's good, bad, all of it. We love
it. If it's bad, don't do it. Don't leave a review if it's bad.
No, we can handle it. We want to get better.
Yes, we do.
So keep giving us the feedback, or if there's certain guests that you would love to hear on, let us know. We'll do our best to get them on. Keep giving us ratings and reviews. That really helps us. So we appreciate you all. This wouldn't be possible without you. So thanks again.
DITTO.
Ditto.